Good morning, all. It is 9 a.m. on May the 3rd, 2022, and time to convene the regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Toni Olson, Board President. The in accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 2028-15, we are including holding meetings remotely. In the meeting, I have this morning Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Vice President, Commissioner Sid Logan, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Ann Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich, Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. I believe I had a thing, a notice that came up. Please mute and turn off your camera or your devices when not presenting. This is a session for the CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. If there is a request for public comment and time remains, 15 minutes will be allowed at the end of the briefing session. And before, John, before I turn it over to you, I wanted to note that today is, or this week, first to the 7th, is National Clerks Week. And we always kind of celebrate, now we're remote this year, but and I found it interesting. This is the 53rd annual celebration, and it is in the USA, Canada, and 15 other countries. And it's to honor the clerk's service in a vital role in democracy and in putting up with the commissioners. Sorry. So a tip of the hat to this our clerk staff. And if you see them in the hallway, please give them a salute.
Excellent.
All right, I will now, excuse me. Did I hear someone that had a comment? All right, I will now turn it over the briefing to John Harlow, who will conduct our briefing session.
Thanks, Commissioner Olson. Good morning, commissioners, and morning. Appreciate the acknowledgement for the clerks. We do have an amazing clerks team, and they put up with and they accomplish a lot.
Amen.
So we will start with any questions in regards to the legislative packet that was in your board packet. And we have Kim Johnston and Brenda White and team here to answer any questions.
I have a comment and a question. First of all, I'm thrilled with the City of Everett's press release about the great work that we've done, that we did with them on their wastewater treatment plant. That's really spectacular, and I hope staff is exceedingly proud of that, as should the City of Everett be. And then next, I see that we have three agreements with Sultan, and I don't remember, did those come before the board? Am I just forgetting, or are those not interlocals?
You'll have to forgive me, as Brenda is out sick today. Brant, are you on the line? Could you happen to speak to that?
We did have one small agreement with City of Sultan that was signed. It didn't have to go to the board. It was just an agreement to allow them to serve water off of our water main, serve actually our Jackson Powerhouse project. I'm not sure what the other two are, though, to be honest with you, Commissioner Logan. I'm not sure if that's one that you were thinking about.
Well, it says there's a memorandum of understanding for interim retail water service. The City Council authorized the mayor to sign a distribution easement for installation, maintenance, electrical facilities at a cell tower location, mm-hmm. and another agreement authorized installation of fiber. I just didn't know if those were interlocals that we needed to approve or not. I'm not worried about them. I just don't want us to have an audit.
I know the one that I worked with them on was for just an interim service to allow the city to serve our Jackson Powerhouse just water without any issues associated with our existing agreement with them. So worked with Sean on that one.
Commissioner Logan?
Yes.
Commissioner Logan, this is Ann Spangler. We'll look into that and get back to you. I understand your question.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all I had.
I have nothing.
No, neither do I.
All right, thank you. So first up is a insurance program overview for the 2022 and 2023 renewal. And that is with Jim Herling. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners. Excuse me, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Pardon me. So just here to give you kind of a quick update on the insurance renewals for the 2022-2023 year. And I guess before we jump in, I want to just let you know that I want to give a shout out to Julie McCallum and Tyler Woolridge, who are our brokers from Gallagher, who are on the call to answer any questions if needed. But I want to give a special shout out to Jan Barnes. Jan is the district risk manager, and for the last 3 months, her life has been consumed with all that I'm about to tell you in the next 5 to 10 minutes. So I really appreciate Jan's involvement and all the work that she's put in, as well as a lot of people around the district that have to help populate all the applications that we go through.
Jim, if you just touch that first page and click on it with your mouse, it should allow you to use your arrow keys to go through it. There you go.
And you're muted, Jim.
Yes, I can't hear Jim.
Oh, yep, you're muted as well.
Wouldn't it be at the bottom of his page with a camera and a microphone? Bottom left. There you go.
There we go. It took me a while to find it. I apologize. For some reason, they gave me a new webcam a couple of weeks ago, and I thought I had the settings all adjusted, and I'm still having trouble seeing things at the bottom of the screen popping up. But anyway, so just kind of jumping in, really we're going to talk about kind of give you a quick overview of what the insurance program looks like. About three policies that that we spent a fair amount of time doing the renewals on, and then talk about the renewal process and where we go from here. So starting out, we've got the governance policy that was passed by resolution and updated back in 2019. Kind of walk through these just quickly, but the excess liability coverage of $50 million, the property insurance for non-transmission and distribution assets for replacement value, vehicle insurance, crime and fidelity, and cyber insurance. And our current policy covers all of these things, as well as the existing policy that we're going to recommend. The next two slides are just graphical representations of the insurance program that we have in place, and to give you kind of an idea, you know, we have $400 million in property insurance. If we look at this from left to right, it has a $250,000 deductible, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And just as an FYI, whenever you see the word retention, self-insured retention, an acronym SIR, those are all just kind of fancy words for deductible. If you think about your own insurance policies, you know, how much money will the district have to spend before the insurance actually kicks in? Across the middle, we have a number of liability policies, the bulk of which are covered by Aegis. They cover the first $35 million in damages. And then we have another umbrella policy over the Aegis policy for another $15 million, which gets us to the $50 million, which is called out in the governance policy. We have workers' comp policy that handles large workers' comp claims. We have $35 million in directors and officers liability coverage, as well as $5 million in cyber insurance, $15 million in employment practices and fiduciary, and then $10 million in crime. So this next slide is, as you're all aware, the last two or three years have been what they call really hard insurance markets. And, you know, there's been a lot of premium increases. There's been a lot of carriers that are kind of dropping out of the various sectors, and the utility sector in particular. And this was a slide that our brokers provided that I really like, that will hopefully give some insight into what's going on, especially in the utility market. This slide has, in 2021, there were 20 individual weather and climate events that caused over $1 billion in damage. And, you know, it's kind of as I expected. This is just in the United States, and you look down in the South and hurricanes and, of course, tornadoes in the Midwest. And out West, we have the wildfires. And for the most part, when I look at this slide from an insurance perspective, I would say, okay, well, this has a big impact on property damage, and I could expect to see a big increase in property damage. But the wildfires are a bit of an odd duck. And as you're aware, the utility industry is being blamed and trying to be held accountable for a lot of these wildfires. And when I bring that close to home, I pulled this article. It was in the District Daily. It was in the Spokesman Review a couple of weeks ago. And it's, you know, essentially insurance companies are suing Avista to recover the payouts for the 2020 wildfires. And just looking at a handful of sentences, there's a state report that found that the fire was started by a tree branch that fell in the lines. And then there were 50 mile an hour winds that then took this fire into these two towns. But the insurance companies are saying that Avista should have known and had a duty to, you know, perform vegetation management and clear all these trees. And it's a big ask for utilities to do that, given the length of the service territory and whatnot. But at the end of the day, this, you know, the wildfires, all the weather events, and, you know, the notion that utilities are somehow responsible for the wildfires is impacting both the liability insurance and the property insurance coverages both. So with that background, let me kind of jump into the individual policies that I want to talk about. Excess liability insurance, this covers damages that the district may do to other people's property and other bodily injuries. Currently, we have $50 million in limits. We have a deductible of $2 million per occurrence. We pay a little bit extra to bring the water deductible down, just because that $2 million hit would be really difficult for the water system to handle. But we do have $10 million in reserve set aside to handle such emergencies. You can look at our claim history. It's pretty good. We've had a few claims over the years, but nothing super catastrophic. So we went out to, you know, when we do our renewals, we go out to the market and we take a look at what other carriers have to offer. The two carriers that we have right now, Aegis and EIM, are what they call industry mutuals. And being industry mutuals, their only clients are utility companies, and their policies are tailored towards utility companies, and they cover risks that that are significant to us. And so it's a really good fit with those two carriers. But in the interest of doing our market research and making sure that the district is getting the best coverage for the best money, we did go out and approach other carriers. And what we found was that their coverages were lacking, and it was going to require us to go out and buy additional coverages. And specifically, what was lacking was the pollution, the wildfire, and the employment practices. And so just getting quotes for the liability and the pollution, that came in at about $2.5 million. And with our existing carriers, we can get the same package and get the employment practices for about 1.7. Okay. So we're going to recommend that we stay with our existing carriers and renew with them.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Jim, those insurance companies that are suing Avista, do you know which ones they are? And are we insured by any of the same ones? Or do you know?
I do not know. The article didn't specify which carriers were suing Avista.
Okay, thank you.
So property insurance, this covers the district's real and personal property. So think of buildings and the contents, think of substations, think of powerhouses, penstocks, that sort of infrastructure. The transmission and distribution is excluded, and that's spelled out in the governance policy to ensure poles and wires is not really feasible. There's not, there really are no insurance companies that would touch it. So it's, if we were to try and find it, it would be incredibly expensive. We have a $400 million policy with a variety of deductibles, $250,000 being the primary. Water, again, we purchase to bring their deductible down a little bit, given the size of the utility. And there are some sublimits for certain natural disasters that insurers are not willing to insure above $100 million. You know, our claims history has been really good. We've had two claims in the last 20 years. And again, neither are very big, and I don't want to jinx anything, knock on wood. You know, I think we're a good insurance risk.
Jim, so, this is Commissioner Olson. I should know this, but I don't. Can you give me an example of a terrorism incident that would be linked to this to our policies?
Well, the big terrorism example I can give you is like the Oklahoma City bombing. If you go back.
All right. Okay. Gotcha. All right. Thank you.
And that was a domestic act of terrorism as opposed to an international act of terrorism. And if somebody, you know, some terrorist, you know, whether they're domestic or otherwise, you know, goes out and sets our building on fire, or does something, dams are a big one that the insurance companies worry about.
Thank you.
So the property insurance that we have in place is what's called a quota share policy. And we have five different carriers that provide different percentages of coverage. And it's a really good system, especially when it comes to negotiating, because you've got multiple players and you can, you know, get quotes and kind of compare them and if one carrier wants to decrease their exposure, then you typically another carrier will be willing to step up and take on the coverage that was dropped by the other carrier. But that being said, you know, we've approached all the incumbents, and we have also approached a number of other carriers to see if they would be willing to take on a piece of the policy. And so we're still in the process of negotiating all the numbers. But one of the things that came up during last year's presentation was, you know, the $250,000 deductible, and is that the right size for the district, and could we take on additional risk? And I believe the answer is yes, we can take on additional risk, but we want to negotiate the coverages and the rate at the lower deductible before we go back and ask the carriers to say, okay, well, if we go from a $250,000 deductible to, let's just say, a $1 million deductible, what would the savings be? And so this is a negotiating strategy that we are employing, but we haven't gotten, you know, we're still continuing to negotiate. So we haven't gotten to that part of the negotiation where we want to go back and approach them about the higher deductible. Cyber coverage, you know, our current policy that we have covers 5 million has a limit of 5 million and a $250,000 deductible. Just as a refresher, cyber covers three things primarily. You've got your breach response services, which is, you know, when something happens, we bring in kind of a forensic IT team to examine the system, kind of tell us where the breach was, how it happened, you know, what was the pervasiveness of the breach. There's also a legal team that gets involved to tell us, you know, what notifications we have to make, who we have to notify and make aware that the breach occurred. And then there's also a public relations aspect of, okay, how do we want to, you know, disclose this to the public and let people know exactly what happened and how it happened. So that's one part of it. The third party liability piece is the damages that others will come after the district for. So if somebody wants to sue us because they feel like we, you know, were negligent in our cyber systems, that somehow their credit card was breached, somehow their personal information was breached. That's what the third party liability coverage is. And then first party damages are the costs that the district has to incur to stand the system back up again. So the data restoration costs, it also covers cyber extortion. So if there was any kind of ransomware, this policy would come in and cover that. As the board may be aware, you know, the last few years have been, there has been a lot of cyber events that utilities have been faced with, and there has been a lot of ransomware events. And when we went out to the market to renew this policy, there were a lot of carriers. In fact, I looked at the list. I think we approached 11 carriers to talk to them about our cyber coverage. And essentially, many of them were not interested in adding any new business. Others were willing to talk to us, but they wanted to raise the deductible to $1 million from $250,000. The incumbent that we have is Aegis. They came back and said, well, we would do it, but we're going to raise the deductible from $250,000 to $750,000, which was a bit of a shock. And then on top of that, they said that we want to limit our first party damages from $5 million for certain events to $500,000. And specifically, they targeted the contingent business interruption. And the way I would describe that is if one of our major customers has a cyber event, and, you know, I'll just throw out BPA because they're an easy example. If BPA has a cyber event and that impacts us, then we've got insurance to cover that. But the coverage that that we could get was no longer at the $5 million level. It was a $500,000. And then a bricking event is where, like, they get into your servers and render them useless, and hence the term of brick. They become no longer a server, they become a brick. And so they reduce their coverage there from 5 million to 500,000. So it was not the best news that we had, but it was certainly, you know, after contacting 11 other carriers and finding that this was the best we could get, this is the best we could get. So now just kind of taking a look at the individual coverages and the coverage levels, the deductibles, and the premium increases. A couple of things I will mention about this this chart. We will continue to negotiate on all of these policies until May 31st. So even though I'm coming back on the 17th with a resolution that will have a table like this in it, even after that resolution is passed, we will continue to negotiate. And insurers, and especially in this market, they tend to not want to negotiate until you're really down to the, you know, the 11th hour. So I'm confident that we can come in at a lower amount than what's on this, but I can't say how much lower it will be.
Jim, yes. Commissioner Olson, what or who could put pressure on the insurance industry with regard to cyber to provide some realistic coverage? Who governs them? Nobody.
I know we have Julie McCallum on the phone. Julie may be better prepared to answer that question. I will say that we insure through Aegis. When we didn't acquire cyber for quite a while.
Yeah.
And finally, they got a form that was consistent across the industry that really kind of covered the three things that I talked about. And so we work with IT every year and we look at this, and we finally decided that, yeah, this was a coverage that was worth the money. It was worth, getting. And we've only had it for, I think, 3 years, maybe four. We had Beasley to begin with, and then we switched over to Aegis because Aegis offered better coverage for less money. And now, like I say, because there's so much cyber activity, we're finding most carriers are kind of pushing back from the table and not wanting to write new business.
Hey, Jim, this is Scott Jones, a district CFO. One other very quick comment on that front. Cyber was a big issue that I dealt with in my previous job. And, one of the challenges, if you think about it, if you imagine insuring your car, you know what your car is worth, you write an insurance policy about it, you protect it, the value is kind of easy to determine. The thing that we just always bumped up against, and I think this is going to be the case in the industry for a while, is the degree of magnitude of the cyber world is just so uncertain that it's very difficult to construct some kind of analytics around what you're insuring. The industry in general just doesn't know the scope of the threats. And so I think so long as we're dealing with such a high degree of uncertainty about where the threats are coming from, the damage they could do, the real impacts on the business, it's just always going to be a challenge, or at least for the time being, it's going to be a challenge on cyber. Cyber's been in this uncertain space now for about 6 or 8 years, maybe longer. And a lot of it is just about uncertainty of what we're covering.
Scott, this is Commissioner Olson again, but we have aggressive, might not be the right word, but a very proactive cyber protections.
Yeah,
and I see aggressive, so that's kind of a plus side.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And the carriers will typically ask us a lot of questions. Jim usually sits down with Kevin and others on the IT side periodically, and they'll ask a lot of tough questions about what our mitigation approaches are. And those are big, big helps folks a lot more comfortable for sure. So you're absolutely right. We're doing everything we can to protect ourselves. But we certainly want to have the coverage sitting on top of it. And it's a tricky, it's a tricky thing for the carriers to try to get their brains around for sure. Yeah. The industry is just changing constantly. The cyber threats are.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Wolf. I watched a 60 Minutes program from, I think it was April 27th. And it was they had a really good segment about cyber protection being shielded and all of that. So it led me to wonder if the if Congress might consider, and maybe Kim could weigh in on this, if Congress is considering or might consider some requirements that would say insurance carriers cannot block. I mean, that would be getting into the business part of it. I don't know, but it just seems like it's not okay that we cannot get reasonable insurance for this problem. But also they mentioned that with the war against Russia right now, with Russia, if they get any more frustrated about not winning easily, they will up the ante on us quite likely, because they're seeing the US more and more as an enemy. And so, you know, that's another big threat, is what Russia could do to us.
Yeah. Good input, Commissioner. Jim, proceed.
Oh, okay. Well, I see Julie has jumped on, and I don't know if you have any comments.
I didn't see that.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Julie McCallum with Gallagher. Just a couple of comments. You know, back to what Scott said, the cyber industry has just gone through a tornado over the past 10 years. When carriers first started offering cyber, it was extremely inexpensive. So then all the breaches started happening, starting in 2019, and then for certain with 2020 with the switch to remote work. So many of the carriers it was not profitable for them at all. We used to, on the public sector side of the fence, have a good 20, 30 carriers that were interested in writing. But now it's a handful. And for a public utility your size, it's very, very small. The other thing to think about cyber, it's an opportunity to take advantage of what Aegis offers with vulnerability scans, and to really strengthen and take that aggressive approach to keep the bad guys out. And additionally, there are free within the Aegis risk platform tabletop exercises. So your IT folks can simulate a breach. And then so who in IT responds and who in other departments responds. So you all at the district are just have your act together, have your vulnerabilities addressed. And then if by chance something does go wrong, you know what to do. So that's kind of cyber isn't. It's not like auto insurance where you have a accident and you get your car repaired. Cyber is just much more nebulous. So anything you can do on the front end to be super on the offensive side of the fence will be the best for the district going forward. And whether Congress or carriers will change their tune in the next couple of years, I'm very, very uncertain. I think we're in this kind of pattern for the near future. Sorry.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And I would add that Kevin Johnston has played an integral role in our renewal process. And we work with Kevin. And Kevin works with Jan and, you know, a number of the underwriters that we have approached on this topic. And so I owe him a specific shout out as well. But yeah, we'll continue to work on these and try and get any additional coverages we can, premium reductions that we can, and like I say, that will continue until, you know, we bind, which will be on May 31st. So that's really kind of the next steps. I've already covered that. We're going to continue to work on this, and I will be back on May 17th with a resolution asking for approval to go ahead and bind the coverages based on where we're at that point in time. So questions?
Kind of good news, kind of bad news.
Yeah.
No, Jim, I don't need a response. I was just making an off-the-wall comment.
That's more optimistic than I was thinking. I was thinking, oh, no, another year of a big increase in insurance. I think we've had three in a row, but I really appreciate, Jim, you and your team and Julie and Tyler working on this to get it down. I know this cannot be what you want to see either. So, I applaud us looking at our deductibles and making sure that each insurance makes sense. And I mean, it's interesting if they raise the deductibles on some things, it makes you wonder whether it's worth getting the insurance.
Yeah, and that may be, and Commissioner Logan, you triggered a thought that I really wanted to make sure when we look at the deductibles, what I just showed you, when I come back with the resolution in 2 weeks, if the cost benefit analysis works and we can move the deductible up on the property insurance, I will make that change and we'll point it out when it comes back to the commission. But the $250,000 does seem rather low. But if we, let's say up to a million, you know, we're taking on another $750,000 of risk exposure. And I want to make sure that pencils out, that you know, there's no, you know, similar to there was a point in the cyber insurance, we asked Aegis, well, if we go from 750,000 to a million, what would you give us on a premium break? And they said, well, we'll give you 15,000. And it's, you know, 15,000 to take on 250 in exposure is just not worth it. So we'll do that analysis. We'll come back. And like I say, we'll, you know, we're hoping that we can do something to bring that property insurance down.
I appreciate all that you're doing on this, and I want to say good luck because it's really complicated. And as Scott said, and as you have said, it's change, and Julie McCallum, changing so fast, and there's so much uncertainty. And that kind of gets into another part of our meeting today about uncertainty and planning and looking forward. So thank you so much for all your work.
All right. Well, thank you, commissioners.
Yeah, and thanks, Jim. And again, I wanted to acknowledge Jim and Julie and Tyler and Jan Barnes and the folks that have been involved in this. There is a lot of sausage grinding going on behind
you.
An extraordinary amount of work. And it if you just think of overall inflation and the impact, and then you think about the critical events, the fires, the storms. I think we're going to be dealing with the uncertainty and insurance coverage impacts or issues for a while. And I'm just really appreciative of the team we have that does such a fantastic job to really do the due diligence that we know we're doing the best we can for the organization. So thank you, guys.
Could I make one real brief comment? Sorry to jump in here at the end as we're getting ready to wrap up, but a couple of things to put some things in perspective, and maybe a bit more of a positive spin on some of the results that are in there, regardless of the premium increase itself. And you know, as you look at inflation, especially on the property side, the underlying rate that's applied, because within that premium there is an increase in overall values. So you see the increase, but it's also due to increase in values due to inflation. And you know, that process in and of itself of your team is a tremendous lift to get those proper values to our team to go out to those markets. But with that, the underlying rate, the previous 2 to 3 years, the market was getting somewhere in the range of 20%+. Last year, I think we came in below market average, which market average was 20 to 25%. And this year, the actual underlying rate from a property perspective is going to land somewhere in the 5 to 10% range. So a single digit increase, which is still a big, a large amount of money. But at the same time, the market itself is moderating or has corrected to some degree. So there is it's a small glimmer, but there is some light at the end of this this market tunnel from a property perspective anyway.
All right. Well, thank you, Tyler. And for the record, that was Tyler Woolridge, our Gallagher representative.
Yeah, thank you, Tyler.
But that is a good point that what we're insuring's value is going up. Even though we may not get any more utility out of it, it's worth more.
And yep. I would add, I think we all know this, but one of the points they made in that program that I watched was that utilities are the favorite targets of our enemies.
John, let's go on to the next item.
Okay, and actually, I will apologize. I skipped over our famous Julie Cunningham and the media update. I did not realize that she
I'm
had
sorry, I didn't see it either.
Nobody even missed me. This is the scary part.
I know it, Julie. I am so sorry.
And I have a good report this month. A long, lengthy, great news report
That's
for you
great.
All. So I'll try to move quickly through it because I know we have a very full agenda today. But I did want to share some things with you. Starting with April 17th, we have this story, front page story in the Herald about clean energy search turns offshore and featuring Scott Spahr, who always liked it when employees get featured in things. So that was great. April 18th, we had a nice story about our Tree Line USA Award in the Everett Herald, my Everett News, and my Edmonds News. I think it was our 19th year in a row for that. So that is awesome by that team that helps get us that recognition. We had so many stories and so much coverage on our new Everett Solar Project. I can't even tell you how excited we all are for when it gets cited, because that's going to garner so much attention. But we had a story in the Herald, KNKX, Public Power Daily, Everett Post, My Everett News, already all of those covering it, because it's just that exciting of a new project for us. So that was wonderful. We had the My Edmonds News, My Everett News picked up that our offices are reopened. So we got some coverage on that. They also picked up on our envelopes, the envelope story. The Everett News covered that as well. I hope the Everett Herald covered that as well. I hope you saw that the city of Everett is also having the same, not that I wish that on them, but they're having the same kinds of problems. So we're mitigating it really pretty well. And our customers have been very supportive and responding positively to our need for them to change over. So good news on that. Our mascots are getting some attention. Andrea Brown in the Herald did a really fun story about naming our mascots. The Everett News and My Edmonds News picked that up, and they're running with it as well. Our Reading Between the Lines with our partnership with the library also got covered by those three different papers. Aaron wrote a real nice story for the NWPPA Bulletin about preventing battery explosions, and that's in the Bulletin this month. Our partnership with the city of Everett was mentioned in a press release with them. Our Everett's wastewater plant saves 10 million kilowatt hours in energy savings program, as Commissioner Logan mentioned earlier. Our mutual aid with Cowlitz PUD got picked up by the Longview Daily News. Our Connect Up program was covered in the Everett Herald in our monthly Herald column. We're working to make sure we're keeping our customers up to date on that. And there was an editorial that the Everett Herald ran, which was on switching to electric cars, and that got attention. And then today, there also is a story in the Herald about how many customers are switching to EVs, and it mentions our $500 rebate. It also mentioned that in Snohomish County, there's now 10,144 electric vehicles registered. So it's picking up, it's getting, we're the second highest county in the state for that. So that was a good thing. And then I hope you saw that the Herald, that the Current came out the week of Earth Earth Day week. So really positive results with that. And I wanted to take on to what Commissioner Olson said. In addition to National Clerks Week, it is also Teacher Appreciation Week. And we have wonderful teachers that we have on staff and wonderful contract teachers that represent us in the classrooms. And man, we are so lucky that we get to work with excellent experts in those fields. So thank you.
Thank you, Jill.
I wanted to add that I received my NWPPA magazine, and that is a really, really good article by Aaron Swing.
Aaron does a great job for us on those. Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. I'll pass that along.
Okay.
You get to see him this afternoon for Employee of the Month.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that offshore power article was especially good. I thought it was well researched, and I really liked that they contacted us and talked about our experience. I thought that was very positive.
We were pleased with it too, Commissioner, because you're never quite sure on those. And I thought our team did a really great job. Scott was excellent in it as well. So good stuff. Thank you, John, for doubling back for me.
Well, you're not off. You're not done yet.
Yeah, I'll be back in the afternoon.
No, the teachers. The recognition of our teachers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that you have taken that program from
they're amazing
nothing mm-hmm. to something that the schools want, mm-hmm. and you probably have more requests than you can fill. But it's a really outstanding program.
Thank you, Commissioner. I was sharing with John that's probably over the last 2 years been, for me personally, one of the hardest things, because it's been all of education has been in such tumultuous times, and they have really worked to make sure we stay in it and serve our students and our education community. So bravo for our Jenny LaMarca and Heather Herbst. They do a great job for us. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll pile onto that. Again, a huge kudos and thank you to Jenny and Heather. They are pretty amazing, and what they've been able to accomplish over some trying times the last couple of years. And actually, I think that the Education Act has grown even in through a difficult time. So great job. Thank you, Julie. I'll never forget you again. Promise. Next up is our draft long-term strategy, and that is Laura Lemke. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Laura Lemke. I'm the strategy and performance planning leader for the district, and we're here this morning for a touch base with you on the draft long-term strategy that we've discussed in previous meetings, and I'm hoping that I've just taken control. Okay, great. So our purpose this morning is to share this draft document with the commission. It's intended to capture your conversations with the executive leadership team throughout commission meetings and special meetings over the last 12 months. We will be using this document as the foundation of our development of the strategic plan and other activities as we roll into the 2023-27 strategic planning development. Our request this morning is that we just want confirmation from you, including feedback on the document itself, to make sure that we are appropriately and accurately capturing your input and feedback during those prior conversations. Just to set context for anybody from the public that's joining us that maybe hasn't heard the prior conversations, this is kind of our planning horizon and the portfolio of work that we're doing. We started early last year, actually in March of last year, with conversations around purpose, vision, anchors, and values. Those are enduring tenets that we'll be paying attention to as we develop this long-term strategy and our then underlying strategic and operating plans. Our long-term strategy looks out about 10 or more years. It will be supported by a strategic plan, the first version of which, the newest version of which will be 2023 to 2027. And then that will be supported by annual operating plans that will each individually look out about 2 years that would be updated each year. Pausing in case there's any questions on any of that. Okay. So as I mentioned, this long-term strategy draft document that we're sharing with you is that kind of 10 to 15 year look guiding the long-term direction of the district. The document itself covers a situational context, so just kind of the operating environment in which we were drafting it and the thinking that we did about the future. It describes our purpose, vision, anchors, and values, and identifies the five strategic priorities. It's intended to capture and reflect your conversations and the decisions and choices that you made during those conversations. It will serve as the foundation of our 2023 to 27 strategic plan and the specific objectives, goals, and metrics we will set. And we anticipate that the specific language in this document might continue to evolve as we move through the process of developing those objectives and having the conversations about what exactly we're focused on over the next few years, just to ensure that we can keep that alignment. I'm going to pause and ask for thoughts, reactions, feelings on the document, because that is kind of my primary purpose for being here today. We can walk through it page by page, or just hear your general thoughts and feelings, commissioners.
Laura, I guess I'll go first. I think you guys hit it out of the ballpark. I think it's perfect. I'm very impressed. I'm impressed at the process. I mean, this really is, it was such an interesting way to approach this challenge. And I think you've made it a really living, breathing document that really will help us going forward. So very impressed. I wouldn't change a word.
Thank you, Commissioner Logan. There's been a lot of people working behind the scenes on this.
Yeah.
I know.
Involved much of the utility. Commissioner Wolf?
I agree with your comments, Commissioner Logan and Commissioner Olson. It's been a long-term effort for the people involved and very comprehensive, and I'm also favorably impressed.
Thank you, Commissioner Wolf.
Commissioner Olson, amen to what my fellow commissioners said. And, you know, I see this, it's action-oriented. It's not just words on a piece of paper that are going to sit on the shelf and gather dust. So that's what I'm seeing in this, that I haven't seen, maybe it's existed, but, you know, in the past it was kind of, we created this wonderful thing, but there were no action plans to support it. So I really appreciate that. It's well done.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. I won't fish for controversy or negative feedback. So if you're pleased with the document, we can spend a couple minutes talking about next steps and where we're going from here.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. So speaking of action plans to support that, that is essentially what we are undertaking right now. As agreed kind of when we reviewed project schedule and development plan at the end of the January 25th special meeting, we are working with the executive leadership team and internal subject matter experts and senior leadership to draft 2023 to 2027 objectives for each priority and kind of the underlying approach and key initiatives and metrics for each one of those. That work is underway. And we'll continue forward, and we anticipate bringing you a draft version of that later this summer for your feedback and input at that point.
Laura, I do have a question on that.
Mm-hmm.
John, these are operational plans, correct?
This next step is the five-year strategic plan.
Oh, it's still strategic. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not part of that. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
It starts to get slightly less high level and visionary and a lot more actionable in the strategic plan, but it is still more at that kind of higher level of the
All right, thank you.
An approach that we're going to take rather than the specific individual actions and ideas.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any questions or comments on the next steps?
No.
All right.
Thank you. Commissioner Logan, no?
I have no questions. I will say that I think broadband could definitely fall within this plan if it makes sense for us. So.
I appreciate it.
And I think I heard Commissioner Wolf agree. So
yep.
I'm okay too.
Great. Thank you. I feel like This is the shortest time I've ever spent with you. I appreciate your time this morning.
Well, if you want us to make, we can certainly give you more.
No,
go
no,
off
thank
track.
You.
No, let's stay point on track.
Excellent. And then I do just want to take a second before we end to give a very specific shout out to Sarah Bond, Lisa Honeywell, and Kim Johnston as part of the core team, and let you know that we are expanding the core team. We're adding 4 additional people to help us through the heavy lift of the strategic planning and then operating plan development. And the 4 people that we are adding to the team are the same 4 that helped us with the scenario development, who you saw last summer. So that's John Hebe, Brian Booth, Michelle Ardrey, and Kelly Stickney. So don't be surprised as you see their names and faces as we move through the next steps of the process. We're excited to have them join us. And then also a thank you to everybody else who's been participating behind the scenes. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Laura. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you, Kim and Sarah and Lisa. There has been a lot of people involved with this. The leadership has been extraordinary, and I'm very pleased with where we are and where we continue to head with the strategic plan. So next up is a rate update on the EV chargers here at the PUD headquarters, and that will be with Brian Booth. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Brian Booth, Senior Manager of Rate Economics and Energy Risk Management here at the PUD. Joining me today will be Jerome, I hope I get your last name right, Jerome Drescher, and Shelley Pattison, Manager of Strategic Partnerships and Policy, along to help answer questions as well. So let's go ahead and hop into it. Ooh, if I could control the screen.
If you click on that front page with your mouse and then use your arrow keys, it should work. It shows that you do have control of it. I can go through it for you if you'd like.
Yeah, please. Okay, so today's purpose, we'll have an update for the commission on the project developments and timeline. And also we will be requesting commission approval of a rate adjustment, given everything we now know about the project as we've gotten closer to completing it. So Jerome, I'm hoping you're on the call. Can I hand it over to you to talk about the project update?
Absolutely. Thanks, Brian. So quick project update to start off. We did have some timeline impacts to this project because the district had to do some redesign when we realized it was going to be important to make sure that these parking spaces and chargers were ADA accessible. The good news is we did come out with a really good design. We are going to have great accessibility for the chargers and the parking spaces with the new design. There will be a little bit of additional construction scope and some small timeline impacts from that as well. We're gonna have to do more paving and reconstruction of the sidewalk there, as well as a little bit of additional storm drain infrastructure, just to support the different grading that we're gonna need to make these ADA accessible. Mm-hmm. We did find, Brian, did you wanna note something there?
No, I was just messing with my microphone, sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. We did sign a construction contract with Forma Construction in April. We anticipate that they will be starting around the 3rd week of May, and they should be finishing around the 3rd week of June. So we are conservatively anticipating maybe about a month for commissioning and testing of the chargers, which would make those available to the public around the 3rd week of July. If we have a really smooth commissioning and testing, we might be able to make those available to the public a little bit sooner. We have already purchased both the chargers and the electrical switch gear for this project. That turned out to be really fortuitous. There's really long lead times for all of that equipment right now, but because we've already purchased it, we won't have any schedule impacts because of those long lead times.
Okay, thank you, Jerome. So a little bit of a reminder on the rates. We did approve, or the commission approved rates last year, June 1st of 2021. The rates were designed to recover the assumed project cost of the district. The initial budget was based on 2019 estimates, and they have since increased due to those ADA design updates, some project discoveries that were arrived along the way, and also some general increases in construction costs. With everything else getting more expensive, this project has unfortunately also become more expensive. So we would like to propose that we adjust rates to reflect for these project cost increases. So we are proposing higher rates that will recover the vast majority of those additional expenses. We are, however, recommending that we maintain cost parity with regional charging metric networks. Specifically, Electrify America is kind of the big dog out there. Their rates are 43 cents a kilowatt hour and 40 cents per minute for idle charges. We are proposing that we adjust our rates to match theirs, which should put us in a pretty good position. So we would be the only fast charger in kind of down in uptown Everett, the nearest one being in South Everett with that Electrify America station.
And I have a question. Is there a different rate for chargers that charge fast like ours as opposed to other ones? It would seem like that people might pay a premium to charge quickly. Is that the case? And how much of a difference is that?
So the answer is yes. The faster chargers do cost more. So these prices are parity with Electrify America's fast charger prices. Looking at other charging networks, there's not as much difference as you might think. So there are like ChargePoint chargers in Everett, level two chargers that are much slower, and they are frankly just about the same cost. So we are providing a better product, quite frankly, at the similar cost to these other projects.
Thank you, interesting.
Commissioners, do we have any other questions or comments?
No, it just makes perfectly good sense, Brian. So I would support, I mean, I'll just say it right now, I support it.
I do support it as well. Looking forward to July.
Yes, it seems like we've been talking about this for a while, so it'd be great to see them in the ground. And maybe the three of us can ride Lime scooters around the block or something.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I did see that we were inviting people who are EV drivers to kind of pilot something about our new chargers. Did we get the volunteers that we were seeking?
Yes, I'll jump in, Commissioner Wolf. This is Shelley Patterson. We've had great response. People, you know, our staff is excited and understand that, you know, this is for the purposes of testing the financial transaction. So everybody's on board with doing their part and getting this to launch as quickly as possible.
Well, I sent the information to one of my friends who is an EV driver, and I hope he responded.
We're happy to check into that if you'd like.
Oh, that's okay. No.
So commissioners, I do want to mention next steps on this is we'll be back in 2 weeks for an afternoon consideration of modifying the rate schedule to reflect these new rates. Okay. So we'll be back to talk about it one more time.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Brian. And so next up, we have Maureen Barnes, and she has two topics. The first one is a surplus and sale of land for future county road, and then PSC easement for gas regulator. So good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning. I'm Maureen Barnes, manager of real estate services. Well, for some reason, when I click on it also, all right, there we go. The purpose of this presentation is, of course, to inform the board of the upcoming request to declare surplus a portion of the district fee owned right-of-way and allow real estate services to execute a quitclaim deed for the transfer of the property. I'd also like to be able to answer any questions in regard to impacts, compensation, long-term maintenance, or any other questions you may have. And what we're looking for is a recommendation that we can move forward and in 2 weeks come back to the afternoon session for a public hearing and a vote for via the resolution. So the district owns approximately 10 acres in fee located off North Road and 184th Street Southwest in Bothell. JM1 Holdings LLC is requesting to purchase a portion of the property, which runs along the southeast property line. The total easement area, the fee take would be approximately 8,500 square feet, and the compensation amount is $63,800, and that was determined via an MAI certified appraiser. Currently, JM1 Holdings is developing the property both to the north and the south of the district right-of-way. They've requested to purchase this portion in order for them to have access to their southern parcel, which they're unable to access 184th due to high pressure gas lines, Williams gas. The county of Snohomish, in order to do the subdivision, is requesting that the road actually be dedicated to the county. So it will be up built to county standards, and it will be called 6th Avenue West. The road will be built, as I said, to county standards and dedicated over to the county. And what this will do is actually give us better access to get onto that right of way to do any service that we need to. So looking at this visual right here, this is the portion that they're looking to acquire. Right there at the end, the next property to the east is actually owned by the Edmond School District, and we're on easement in that area. As you can see, this then is just a little corner of it. There's actually no poles there. There are lines, but we'll be retaining an overhead easement. Up above is Linwood High School, and this is the Swamp Creek to Clearview transmission. So again, no district equipment, facilities, or access will be impacted. An aerial easement will be retained for any existing overhead lines. Fencing and gates will be added. And as I said, this will add some additional secure access to our right-of-way. District staff have reviewed and approved this request. We're also Real Estate Services recommending approval of this request. And we'd like to come back May 17th to hold a public hearing and vote on the resolution to declare the property surplus. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions. I do commend you on the presentation. It's all very clear. I mean, if I can understand real estate things, it's clear.
Thank you so much, Commissioner.
I did ask my partner, what does it mean, fee? That means it's, you know, it's paid for real estate.
Exactly.
Like house is fee.
Exactly. And this property was actually acquired back in the 50s when we took over from in Snohomish County from Puget Power and Light.
Isn't it weird that Edmonds High School, Linwood High School in Edmonds School District is in Bothell?
I find it very confusing. Yeah. I agree.
But somehow, you know, they relocated from that place out in Alderwood. The high school used to be there.
Oh, and, okay. No, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Right across the street from Nordstrom. That's where the old high school was. And it was not a good place for teenagers.
Thank you.
I have no questions. Your present, you answered my one question, which is how is the value attained? So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Maureen, you want to go right into the next one?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Thank you.
You bet.
All righty. This one is for an easement, again, on our fee-owned property. And this is for PSC to put in a gas regulator. The purpose of the presentation is to inform all of you about this upcoming request, declare surplus a portion of district fee-owned land, and allow real estate services to execute an easement for a gas regulator. I'll hopefully can answer any questions in regard to impacts, compensation, and long-term maintenance again. And we're just looking for a recommendation that we can move forward in 2 weeks and schedule the public hearing and a vote to declare this surplus. So we own approximately 5 acres in fee, located right off Beverly Boulevard and Wetmore Avenue here in Everett. And it's adjacent to and north of the Beverly Park switching station. Puget Sound Energy is requesting approximately 1,450 square foot easement. This easement will be adjacent to a 10-foot easement, which is located on private property, which that will include the high and intermediate pressure gas mains. These are just the regulators, so it's no gas lines going along our property in this area. The parcel currently is encumbered by the Inner Urban Trail, and there's also easements with the City of Everett and Alderwood Water and Wastewater. The easement area, now this was my mistake, it will not be fenced, but it will be maintained by Puget Sound Energy. Compensation amount is $33,000, and also this was determined by an MAI designated appraiser. And this just kind of shows what it looks like. This is what the equipment will actually be, 2 vaults. And again, I want to stress it will not have the fencing because we do have lines in that area. And you can see looking at the actual here down at the bottom, we've got the Beverly switching station. And this is the Inner Urban Trail. The easement area, as I said, will be right adjacent to private property to the west, and that is where the gas lines actually are. So no district equipment, facilities, or access will be impacted whatsoever. Staff has reviewed and approved this request, as has legal. Real estate services, we also recommend approving this request. And what we would like to do is come back May 17th, again, hold a public hearing and vote on the resolution. And again, any questions?
I have none.
I have none.
Maureen, are we assuming any risk when we do an easement like this?
No, we are not, because we put all of the liability onto Puget Sound Energy. And they completely indemnify us.
Thank you.
John, do we have any more items to come before us this morning?
No, first, thank you, Maureen. Great job.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That is it, Commissioner Olson.
Thank you. Well, we do have time, and we'll take public comment for the next 15 minutes. And folks will be allowed 5 minutes to make their comments. And please note that raise your hand, or if you're dialing in by phone, dial *9. Allison, do we have anyone that wants to make public comment this morning?
We do. We have Gayla Shoemake.
All right. Good morning, Gayla.
Good morning, Commissioner Olson, Logan, and Will. Thank you for having comments this morning. I wanted to thank you for the workshop that you had on the Lower Snake River dams last week. And I hope this means that such topics of great interest to our customers will result in a notice to the public in advance like this was. I have a couple of things. First of all, thank you for that separate notice in their website that told about the workshop coming up. Unfortunately, I think it was counterproductive because it directed people to the workshop but then directed them to the section about the workshop, but then didn't tell them how to go, that they should then go to the commission meeting to actually get on the workshop. So I would recommend in the future, if you have a special section of the website, that's great, but please have in that section someplace to get on the website, go to the commission section of the website. Some people did call me about it, and I was able to tell them, but some people did not. So anyway, that's just for the future. It was a good idea, but there was a little bit left off of it, so people could not get to the website. And secondly, I appreciated the information that the staff, again, still talking about the Lower Snake River dams. I appreciated the information that the staff put together on the con side of breaching the dams. However, I thought the pro side was very brief, and it didn't mention the historic damage to the indigenous peoples and the treaties that had been broken, which I thought was pretty important, and that was not mentioned. It wasn't exactly halftime pro and halftime con on the workshop. It was three quarters of what would be wrong with breaching the dams. So I think, again, I think when you have a workshop, even if the public wasn't invited, that it should be at least half and half rather than three quarters against it and a quarter for it. I thought that was not quite as balanced as I would have preferred it. I think it, although also you said that the commission was not taking a stand on the breaching of the dams, it was pretty clear from the workshop that that was the commission's approach. So, you know, just kind of be honest about it and say, you know, we're not going to, we don't have a position as far as the official position, but this is our approach. I just think it would be a little more honest to say this is where you're coming from. So anyway, thank you for doing it. Please do it again in the future. And remember to tell the customers to go to the commission section of the website to actually get on. Thank you very much, Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Gayla. Allison, do we have other customers that would like to provide public comment this morning?
I do not see any other hands raised.
All right, now I've got to find my script. It is now 10:17, and the meeting is being recessed, and the regular meeting will reconvene virtually at 1:30 p.m. Thank you all.